Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Wire.
Hey, The Wire podcast, where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire and talk about it. He was drinking.
Yeah, I was going to do a spit take.
Oh.
And talk about it.
Yes.
There we go.
Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Three episodes left, which means you only have three chances to get your street name. Patreon.com/Frogcast. $8 tier gets you a street name. So please make sure, if you haven't heard it yet, email us. Frogcast@gmail.com. We have like three or four people who emailed us to say they fell through the cracks. Do it before it's too late, before we move on to our next show and your name is at the end of some episode of Alf or something.
Yeah,
I don't know what it'll be, but yeah, so please do that, and then also give us 5 stars in review. You know the drill. Okay, today,
how many seasons do you think Alf got?
Too many, I guarantee it.
Yeah,
I guarantee.
How many is too many?
More than one.
You think they could have got all of that out there in one season and said what they wanted to say?
What did they want to say? Sometimes aliens eat cats?
Yeah, it was a thrilling exposé of, you know, the failure of a modern American city as told.
I think it's
through the eyes of an alien who eats cats.
I think it's about the failure of Hollywood to
stop doing cocaine.
To stop doing cocaine. Well, specifically heroin. I believe the guy who did the show was a big old junkie, and that's what Permanent Midnight is about.
Oh,
if anything, maybe it's an
argument. Wait, it's about Alf?
It's about the guy who created Alf, yeah.
Oh, wait, really?
Or maybe it's the guy who wrote on Alf.
Well...
Doesn't matter.
We'll have to cover this in the Alf show.
Yeah, that'll be our Alf show. Pod yourself an Alf. but today, we're not talking about Alf. We're talking about The Wire. We are talking about from season 5 of The Wire, episode 8, Clarifications, and our guest, returning champion, back to defend his championship or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is Dave from Dopey.
Thank you. It was Jerry Stahl who wrote on Alf. Who is Permanent Midnight was about. Alf had 4 seasons of mediocrity, just so you're clear, and happy to be back talking about The Wire.
I was like, oh, Jerry Stahl, I know him. I forgot the Alf part. I don't know how I missed that, but you know.
No, it's a very important part of his story.
Yeah.
It's because in Permanent Midnight, one of the biggest weaknesses of Permanent Midnight is they didn't call Alf Alf. They called him Mr. Chompers. And it failed the show. And instead of him being a wisecracking Jewish alien, he was an English alien, which was not as funny.
Yeah, no, they should have just gone with. I think that movie, it was they were doing a biopic, but they were like, well, no one knows who this guy is. So let's just make shit up. And I was like, no, what makes it interesting is that, you know, someone shooting up heroin in the bathroom at the writer's room of Alf. That's fun.
Alf is the juice of that movie, and that's a big issue. But Jerry Stahl's been on Dopey. He's a good dude. Nice man.
Amazing.
He might be at DopeyCon 5 this year, and maybe you guys can come too.
We would love to talk Alf at the con.
All right, very good.
And by con, I mean Con Film Festival.
Yes.
On the red carpet, yeah.
Yes.
But Dave, so, you know, we've had you on for some of, you know, the greatest, I would say, episodes of The Wire, some of the greatest seasons of The Wire. But we had you on, we're having you on for season 5 for a very particular reason. And it's because Vince and I believe season 5 of The Wire is not that bad. Dave, what do you think about season 5 of The Wire?
You know, it's hard. This is a hard conversation for me because I've been it's such a joy for me to be included in your guys' podcast. I'm a huge fan of what you guys do. Every time I force myself back on the show, I'm so grateful to be included. But I don't think season five is a strong showing. I know that I came on, I started my relationship with you guys in The Wire season two, mm-hmm. another very controversial season. That's right. But for my money, season two is much superior. And it's funny because I recall Vince really having a problem with a lot of the acting in season two. And yes. season two makes season five, or season five makes season two look like Alf or something. Season two was a really happening season. This is such a schlocky season, and it starts with the schlockiest version of the song, the Steve Earle Schlockfest in the fucking half-assed fucking studio. He's not laying it down. Agreed. It's bullshit.
Who in season five, you're talking about acting specifically, who in season five is worse than Pablo Schreiber? Like, you say what you will about season five,
Pablo,
I don't disagree.
Schreiber in season five makes Pablo Schreiber in season two look like
good point.
Yeah, all right,
point.
Marlon Brando or something.
I'll give you that one.
We did specifically mention that. It's like, oh, Nicky's back and he got worse.
Yeah. But come on, Todd McCarthy does a damn good job as a Weaselly,
as Scott Templeton. Yeah. Yes.
I want to get along. I'm a people pleaser by nature, but I have that fucking newspaper. They should burn it to the ground, starting with Scott Templeton. But I think they should murder Gus first. You're supposed to like Gus. We're supposed to think Gus is the salt of the earth. I think they're just jerking. Literally, I think The Wire season five is everyone jerking each other off with two hands. It's a jerk off festival, and everybody's fucking ejaculating all over the fucking place. The newspaper's covered with cum. It's
I love
a disaster.
It. I want to bathe in the newspaper cum.
I
want to
bathe
so
in sun cum.
I also need to say this. Who's the guy who created The Wire? Fucking
David Simon.
This is David Simon's transition to really the jerk off festival, which is Tremé. This is the great transitory jerk off festival to Tremé.
You're not wrong.
Right? It's all just and the quintessential jerk off moment for me of this episode. Yeah. I'll say with two words: junk man.
Junk man.
When he has Dookie ride the pony.
Yeah.
I love the junk man.
Vince loves a good junk man.
I love the junk man.
We're best friends. He's like, you were a junkie? Close enough to being a junk man.
He's like the True Grit bear man. I love them both.
But I'm going to say one positive thing. This is my one positive thing.
Yes, please.
Because I also have to make this caveat. I was so high watching The Wire so many times, wasted, that I didn't notice that Nicky Sabatka wasn't good acting. I was so faded. I thought he was great.
Season five, you got sober.
Five, I felt like Bubbles haircut, the whole premise of McNulty. I couldn't watch it. It was just, it made me, it's a fugazi. It's like taking a real restaurant and putting it in the mall. That's season five of The Wire for me. It's like putting like a good pizza place in a mall. It's not the real thing. But I'm very excited right now as a 49-year-old man, as a guest of you guys, to enjoy the end of the show. I don't like it, but I like it way more. And it's also a sweet morsel. Like, to get McNulty and Lester hanging out, to get Kima to be angry at McNulty and Lester, little moments here and there. But I have lots of problems, but I'm going to stand back and let you guys run the show. And when you need me to tell you about problems, I will pitch in.
Please feel free to at any point interrupt and say, no, actually, that sucks about anything that we enjoy. Because here's the thing. At this point, I've come to the conclusion that while I defend season five is not the worst thing in the world, I don't like it as much as I thought I did upon rewatch.
Really?
I've gone through like a little bit of a, especially this episode. This is like I enjoy this episode, but this is a, spoiler episode. This is an episode in which Omar dies. And I remember enjoying the, the death, like the kind of way that it's like the undignified way they took him out, because I was like, that's so artistic. And then upon rewatch, I was like, you know,
you didn't like this. You didn't like Omar death.
We'll get into it, but I will
what
say,
what is wrong with you? I think you let Dave poison your brain.
I want to say something. I want to say Vince is so sweet. He's so earnest and sweet. He used to write for the local paper. He's a newspaper man. And
that's right.
You feel the need. And does anyone else, this is, you know, episode 8, you've done 7 episodes of this season. Have other people liked season 5? Am I the first real season 5 hater?
No, I think everyone else has argued with us about season. Did anyone like it, Vince? I can't remember.
I don't know. I mean, even I won't say that it's not the worst season, but I also feel like it's still really good. And I feel like this episode is a great example of that for me.
Yeah. Junkman.
Yeah, I like the Junkman.
Junkman, good.
Give
junk
me the Junkman. Yeah.
How about a cameo by Poot? Vince, see Poot working in that?
I remember.
You remember him.
And it's Poot's like, I remember you with the boy Naaman.
Yeah.
And it's like, where's Naaman? And Dookie and Poot, that's one of the worst acted scenes in the history of The Wire. Dookie and Poot, you used to be on the street. That's right. Seems like you need to knock some heads. They're not friends. He's like,
it's
two
characters
you.
Being friends. That's what I like in TV. When two characters be friends.
Vince is very sweet.
Vince is a sweet man.
Very sweet.
And listen, but this is not a show about sweet men. No, this is a show about wires, and we cannot
the FBI,
yeah, and we cannot start this podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you pause through the garden, gotta
pause
your back. Well, I beg your
pod
straighten
podcast
the track.
Podcast
with Jesus is gonna say
the newsroom.
You gotta keep a
fake serial killer pod
down in the hole.
Season 5.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, today we're talking about season 5 of The Wire, episode 8, Clarifications, an episode that came out February 24th, 2008. Vince, what happened? Break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
Baltimore's renewed police commitment brings fresh recruits to Daniels, and Carchetti is forced to make a dangerous political deal. Meanwhile, Haynes approaches Templeton about his sources.
Yeah.
Pull quote, a lie ain't a side of the story. It's just a lie. And that is by the homeless dude whose name that you're probably not going to remember. But it's okay. It's Terry Hanning.
Yeah, that's the name of the character. Yeah. No one, he's the vet.
You don't really need to know that, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Vince, can I ask one more question?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What about the theme song this time?
Yeah.
I don't really like any of them. So like, I'm not like a huge, like, I don't care about this song.
Season 4 theme song, best theme song. The one with the kids singing it. I love that theme song.
I like the one
you
where
hated
it sounds
that
like,
one.
No, I like the one where it sounds like they're in a tunnel playing like, the one that sounds like the Neville Brothers and there's like,
it is the Neville
shit.
Brothers.
Okay. Well, there you go.
See, that's good. They're all good until this one. This
I
one
feel
is
like,
just,
I don't like the Neville Brothers one that much. That's my second.
I don't love this one, but I do like. But like the fact that I like Steve Earle's voice makes it like somewhat okay.
I guess I didn't know what Steve Earle sounded like, so I've been wondering for a long time. Like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I didn't care who sang the song, but then when I found out that it was, you know, Waylon from The Wire, I was like, oh, okay, he does music. And then I watched all of Trebe, and I was like, oh, never mind, I don't like music anymore.
That is funny.
I want to weigh in, but I don't think I made it through a full episode of Trebe, and I don't really like say that as a criticism. That's just a fact, and I don't really remember
starts.
If it's a criticism.
I had many false starts with Treme where I was like, you know, I'm going to watch this. And then I got like halfway through the first episode and I was like, oh my God, I don't care.
Well, it's worse than that. I watched the whole thing I hated the whole thing. I'm a sick person.
Yeah.
And but to repurpose Lester as the Indian chief and Bunk as the greatest trombone player in the history of New Orleans is hard on devotees of The Wire.
True.
It just is. And put them together, it's very, very hard.
The thing is it's supposed to show, you know, this is not a podcast about Treme, but we're making it just for a second. If you haven't seen this, is all going to sound confusing, but here's the thing. It's clear the show is doing this thing where it's like, what if the place was a character, just the way Baltimore is with the thing is that, like, at first you're kind of like interested and like, yeah, New Orleans, you know, that's that's cool, you know, that's got to be a wild character. But then Freeman being the, like, Mardi Gras Indian, and doing every time they're like, this is the most important thing in the world. We gotta make sure that we do this for Mardi Gras. And then he gets all his friends together, all these old men, they all wear these Indian costumes, fine. But then all they do is they go, Indian red, Indian red. And that happens 1,000 times in the show. And I just found myself fast forwarding. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Indian red, Indian red. It's so boring.
Okay. I'm hoping that the follow-up to this show is Pod Yourself Treme.
Oh, yeah, I would rather die.
It's going to be John Yourself from Cincinnati, but we digress, you know?
It will not be John Yourself from Cincinnati, as much as I love it. But Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can't evaluate art divorced from its cultural context. We got to put some of that context back in. We do that with a little thing that we like to call the Remember When machine.
It's back in the day, dog.
Fuck.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day.
Machine tells the tale, son.
You're not going to let me reintroduce it?
No, it's funnier this way.
All right. I forget our segments sometimes. It's fine.
Yeah, that's life.
Yeah, we're going all the way back to February 24th, 2008. Year of Our Lord. That was the same night as they held the 80th Academy Awards.
Oh, magical night.
Yeah, magical night. The stars were out.
I'm going to, off the top of my head, I'm going to guess the winner of Best Picture 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Godfather.
The piano.
Terrible. Godfather 2.
No. It was No Country for Old Men. It was actually a pretty
really good movie.
This was a pretty good year for movies. I'm not gonna lie.
There Will Be Blood, same year.
Yeah, the Jon Stewart hosted for the second time. Best director was the Coen brothers, best actor Daniel Day-Lewis for There Will Be Blood.
Obviously.
Which I like slightly better than No Country for Old Men, but
me
I love
too.
Them both.
I love them both, but I think I've rewatched There Will Be Blood 1,000 times.
Yeah. Best actress, Marion Cotillard for La Vie en Rose. She played Edith Piaf.
Edith Piaf.
Who I think it was an Edith Piaf song that gave us like the Inception.
It did. Yeah. Yep. And she was also in Inception. Yeah.
Actor Javier Bardem. Supporting actor Javier Bardem, supporting actress Tilda Swinton for Michael Clayton. That was another banger.
That was a banger.
It has to be a good year when Michael Clayton's not winning Best
Picture.
Not enough
Tilda. I want more Tilda in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like her weird alien thing.
She's great. She was in The Killer with Michael F. Fassbender. Thought she had a great cameo in that.
I'm sorry, did you say Michael F. Fassbender?
Yeah, that's what I call him.
I missed that. Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call him Michael F. Fassbender, and then there's also Jesse P. Lemons is my other favorite.
Well, Jesse P. Lemons. We all love Jesse P. Lemons.
Other stories that were happening. This is from the New York Times. After subprime debacle, U.S. wrestles with a question of bank bailouts. Should they or shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Over the past 2 decades, few industries have lobbied more ferociously or effectively than banks to get the government out of its business and to obtain freer rein for financial innovation. But as losses from bad mortgages and mortgage-backed securities climb past $200 billion, talk among banking executives about a major government rescue plan is suddenly coming into fashion.
Oh. Mm. Okay, it's getting fashionable.
We're things are
like
changing.
Like low-cut jeans. Like trucker hats.
We're in the mood of a, what was it, a style shift?
Vibe shift.
Vibe shift, that's right. The vibe shift was...
The vibes are saying, bail us out.
A proposal warns that as much as $739 billion in mortgages at, quote, moderate to high risk of default over the next 5 years, and that millions of families... could lose their homes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. We'll know what happens.
It's gonna go good.
Raul Castro took over in Cuba.
That's right. I remember when Fidel died, I was just like, damn, he lived.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like he lived.
He's around. He's still doing it.
He's smoking all the poison cigars the CIA tried to give him. He's like, I don't give a fuck, bro.
Yeah, I'll itch myself to death, bitch. Bring it. Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to poison his wetsuit. Anyway, Fidel is Fidel. You know that well, he said to the National Assembly shortly after he voted
bars.
Him president. Yeah.
Bars.
He is irreplaceable and the people will continue his work even though he is not physically here.
Mm.
Cool. Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He was 76, which makes him pretty old now. I gotta say, right?
Raul is still alive.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's still leading the thing.
Good for him. These guys, they live forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's the wealthy retired. Yeah. Wait, someone else is okay. Yeah, no, yeah. Miguel Diaz Canel. Well, he's retired, but he's still alive. So good.
Still
for
alive.
Him.
That's what matters.
Finally, we have a very important story. It's the Post reporting on the Times, which I always enjoy. New York Post headline, Times canes itself on story.
Times canes itself.
Yeah, but canes is spelled apostrophe C-A-I-N-S.
McCain. Okay, mm-hmm, we're talking about mm-hmm. McCain.
We're talking about McCain, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
The story, the New York Times ombudsman in today's edition criticizes his newspaper for running a story hinting that John McCain had an affair with a female lobbyist, slamming its reliance on anonymous sources.
Yeah.
Clark Hoyt says the paper got it wrong with Thursday's piece on the Republican presidential candidate. If a newspaper is going to suggest an improper sexual affair, whether editors think that is the central point or not, it owes readers more proof than the Times was able to provide, he said.
Damn, so, we got a Gus B. Scott Templeton thing going on here.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, you know, after this, the New York Times never lied again.
They stuck to the truth. Five more ombuds. Nope, they fired their ombudsman. But other stuff. Yeah. They don't have that anymore. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't even know what that job is. Ombudsman.
That's where you like uphold the standards and.
Ombudsman. Yeah. I just met him. I don't know. Sorry.
But yeah.
They're not all going to be fucking gold, fellas.
You know what? And that's okay. But I think that's we're properly contextualized. That's the main point here.
Okay. So that's what happened. You know, now we know and can get into this episode. Before we do, this episode's Balmer B story is a Jeff Buckley song, which I can't sing very good at all, but I'll play a little bit of it because I enjoy making myself an object of scorn and ridicule. It's instead of Lover, You Shouldn't Have Come Over, it's Omar, it's Canard, You Shouldn't Have Killed Omar.
Mm. Oh, okay. Those two things sound similar.
Shut up.
I see
shut
the basis.
So I wait for it. I'm sorry about the voice. We know they will kill a serious regular. Oh, I love Canard, You Shouldn't Have Killed Omar.
Oh, God.
But it's now too late. All right, but just imagine someone really good singing it and you'd be like, oh shit,
that's pretty good. I don't know why you're crying.
It's not bad. I mean, vocally is really not that bad. I think it's pretty good.
It could be worse and you can listen to it being worse at the end of the episode when I play the full song. That was me finding a good section.
Wasn't bad.
Thank you.
It was great. Quit crying.
But yes, as the song explains, today on Pod Yourself, The Wire, a series regular dies. Very important person to The Wire. Our favorite character, most people's favorite character, if it's their first time watching. It's, you know, it's like the Kramer of the show, you know? It's like if you're, you know, obviously if you're a Wire connoisseur, your taste is a little bit more high class, you know?
You like the subtle nuances and the overtones and the undertones.
My favorite is, you know...
medical examiner Stevenson.
Right, yeah, mm-hmm. Or Jason Alexander's character. Why did I forget George Costanza's name? but yes, Omar dies. And this is after he's been going on this long campaign to get revenge for the death of Butchie, his best friend, his blind friend.
Omar does love to get revenge. It's like kind of his whole thing for a lot of the show, you know?
That's true. He is on a lot of missions of vengeance. And a lot of them are, you know, it's vengeance. It's of his own making because, you know, with Brandon, his boyfriend, it was the same thing, you know? It was
this is Brandon.
Hey, this is Brandon. And he... And he, like, you know, is also responsible in for Butchie's death in that they only killed him to get Omar back in the street.
In both cases, it's almost more out of guilt than revenge when you think about
it. I have to say something here, okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is that Omar
was probably
going
to be wrong, but go ahead.
Thank you. Omar was not my favorite character on The Wire, but I loved him. I loved Omar. I loved when he would whistle the farmer in the dell, fuck shit up, question, you know, what's his face? Oh, that was the other place that you and I had our problem was with Brother Muzon.
Muzon.
And Omar, every season, even when he's weak, he's strong. Mm-hmm. But in this season, I don't think he would stay out there so weak. Physically weak. So he's almost, you think there's like a sepsis in his leg that's getting to his brain. He's too weak to be out there. His resources are too thin. Even when they're thin, he has a crew. He only has dude.
True.
Dude gets killed and then he's going to go out with the fucking fake crutch. I don't see it. I don't like that. It rings untrue to me.
Mm-hmm.
You're not
but he's
wrong.
He's doing what McNulty's doing, which is that he gets so high on everyone's inability to check any of the things that he does that he inevitably slipping up. He stops taking precautions because no one's doing a damn
thing.
He's
so convinced that everyone else is like dumber than him that I think, you know, in the same way
that
you
could argue
that
he should have learned a lesson from, you know, getting shot in the leg and having to jump out a balcony or getting, you know, getting ambushed and having to jump out
a balcony.
But he did
also, don't you feel like we miss out on how he did survive the fall? Like, don't you think we miss a piece there?
They don't tell us how he survived. They just tell us that he survived and hid in a broom closet and he was pouring cleaning supplies on his wounds.
Well, that's very, very Bodhi. Very Bodhi leaving Kids Village in season one, right?
Yeah.
It's Bodhi crutch, Bodhi weakness, but Bodhi doesn't come back until he has some strength in him. And I feel like Omar was smarter than Bodhi, and Omar wasn't going to go do war on Marlowe's whole crew that week. For me.
Right.
I've said this about season five before. I think a lot of the things that we don't like about it is the fact that it's the end and therefore they had to sort of push it towards a place that gives you an ending. And I think this is one of those cases. They had to like push Omar into a place where, you know, there's a bookend to his story and it doesn't fit. Like they're cutting corners to try and get it to the end place. I think
it's not just the end. It's also the shortest season of The Wire, which we've said before. So I do feel like there's a lot of that extra, like the pacing of it feels off. Like you said, you don't know how he survives that. You just know that he does survive it. You don't really fully understand why he's taking such a huge risk other than you, the viewer, and Omar are convinced at his invincibility. And you're just like, he survives everything. He's the kind of the superhero of the show. He's the one character that you suspend disbelief with.
100%.
Every other character, you're like, oh, they live in this very, like, the the verisimilitude of the show, it's like, man, it's just like real life, except for Omar.
Except for this one guy who's like a Western, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Chris Partlow is very much a superhero.
Partlow is too, that's
and
true.
And Weebay is very superhero-y. The but, three...
Yes, I agree, but I feel like you see them all, even like Chris Partlow, he's a sociopath, but he's not... like Omar has the ability to just walk around alone with a shotgun and people are like, just take the drugs.
Right.
And that, you know, you kind of go like, well, everyone else got guns too, right? Why is it just one guy yeah. with guns? But you accept it because you're like, I don't know, maybe he's the scariest. If you hear that this guy will murder you and not think twice.
Well, he's also, you know, they do take pains to show that he's like, you know, he's separating the drug people from their guns before he robs them a lot of the time.
True. That is true. He does
tactical,
do that.
Very tactical. The other question.
Yeah.
I have another question. I hate to interrupt and do this, but I have to.
That's what the show is.
Why do you guys suppose that in that shootout in the episode before, I think it would give us more feeling if he had killed Snoop, Chris, or Michael, the boy Michael, in that shootout. I would have loved to seen one of them go down. And I think that David Chase loved the three of them too much to lose any of them.
Right.
But I would have liked to see him kill Snoop, Chris, or Michael so that you feel a little bit better about Omar's death. And you feel like he did more. Like, who's Savino? Who cares?
Yeah.
Savino. He's just another face in the crowd.
Yeah, they just kind of threw that in. That was almost another version of like, hey, is that Poot?
Right.
You know,
right.
Just like, hey, remember Savino? I was like, not really.
Yeah,
I remember the name.
I still don't know what Savino looks like. And I watched The Wire like 100 times. It's
same.
Like, who is Savino?
Yeah,
I wanted to see him kill one of those three. And then what about Little Kennard? Little bully Kennard who snapped.
Oh, he's so good, though.
You love Kennard.
I love Kennard. Yeah,
he's
just
Vince
a little piece of shit. He's a little piece of shit. He's
such
a little scumbag.
He's
I know. That's the whole point of him.
Kennard would have bullied me. Like, Kennard at 10 would have bullied me at 25.
Oh,
yeah.
So, yeah,
this shit
yes,
out of me.
Yes, yes.
Well,
he's
a little kid that grew up with no consequences and no morals because he's, like, out there. He's out there in them streets. Like, he's a creature of the system, you know?
He's the kind of kid, the exact kind of kid, who made me realize, like, oh, I don't want to be a teacher. like when I was for the 2 months where I was in school to get a teaching credential, and I was like student teaching, which is just being an aide at someone's, you know, someone else's elementary school classroom. And then I'm like sitting there trying to go one-on-one with some kid who sees that I have some like dead skin crust, like basically dry skin on like my mouth. And he goes like, why your mouth crusty? And I'm like, I'm going to kill myself now.
And then he calls you a gump. And
yeah,
then you know your career
yeah.
is over.
Yeah, slaps me in the face, calls me a gump, and I'm just like, oh, I hate this. I actually don't want to help these kids. yeah, he's very like I feel bad a little bit for Kennard, not the actual character, but the child actor, because obviously he's not at all, you know, he's like a
did you read
kid.
Any of the book about this scene or this episode?
No, tell me, please.
They were talking about how they like legitimately traumatized him because of the scene, and he like he was like puking. He was like puking after he shot it, because, you know, he's a little kid, and he what, and like they, you know, they staged it, they made everything seem super real, like, you know,
so he felt
like it felt real in the moment, and he felt, and he was
it's
was
also that I saw an interview with him when he was, you know, a kid, and it was like maybe season 4 is when he shot this interview, so it was before season 5, before he kills Omar. And they ask them, you know, their favorite character. It's him and the actor who plays Bug. Mm-hmm. And Bug really loves Michael. Is like, I think Michael's my favorite character, which makes sense. He's the guy you film the most scenes with, and he's a great character. And Kennard says Omar, and I was just like, oh, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, so for him, it's probably, and I, you know, I feel the same way about Kennard in terms of the characters, like a piece of shit. I fucking hate him. When we see him in this episode, the first time we see him, he is in the process of torturing a cat that he's about to murder by, you know, pouring like lighter fluid on it. I have a clip of that just because I was just like, Jesus fucking Christ. This
really,
is
really liked the Foley work on this one. Yep, there you go.
Leave that cat alone. He's
Omar, yo.
Canard does not give a fuck. He's like, I'm in the middle of something right now.
But you know, the truth is, though, that's the second time we see Canard. The first time we see Canard is when Omar robs the corner and yes. Canard sees Omar and he's like, look at this gump motherfucker. I could kill him. And yes. then and that's why he doesn't run. And I'm so stupid and not digesting the scene. I thought he was like, sweet boy stroking the cat. I didn't see the lighter fluid. I didn't see. I'm such you a gump. I didn't see what was coming.
You didn't hear the sound effects going. It's funny because like if you just watched it,
sound.
If you watched on mute and ignored the lighter fluid, he is probably
sound.
Just petting that cat. It's just but the Foley artist is doing all the work on
that's
like,
true.
Making, you know, it's all sound editing.
I thought it was a happy sound.
Yeah, well, that's a sound my cat makes all the time when I'm petting them. Yeah. But yes, so like, this scene is kind of great, that little snippet, because it's obviously doing a little bit of an art there where it's like Canard is number one, the type of person who hurts cats, which is a fucking serial killer, or who like hurts small animals for fun. And then also, you know, why does he do it? Well, because a cat is smaller and weaker than he is. And I think he senses weakness in, clearly senses weakness in Omar. And he's like, this guy, everyone else is scared of him. I am a young kid. I don't know the stories of him. Clearly mm-hmm. his legend is greater than the actual person. Because in that scene you talked about, Dave, he says like, that's Omar. Like it's in this way of like, I've been hearing about this guy since I was even littler than this. And now I'm seeing him and he's limping.
Well, it's Gumpy Omar. It's not Omar with the trench coat with the nice durag and the shotgun over his shoulder. This is Gimpy Gumpy Omar with the fucking broom as crutch, bleeding from every fucking body spot and like not looking too healthy.
Yeah. And everyone's treating him like, you know, the legend that they have in their mind, except for him. And
well, also, he's, you know, he's at that age of adolescence when a lot of kids like torture animals or, you know, play frog baseball or whatever. Like that's the age when a lot of people like they're testing that, whatever, like a lot of adolescent boys do when they're peculiarly like, they're testing their own. Capacity to be mm-hmm. uncaring in that way, and that sort of
you're seeing
sort of,
where your own
it's sort of Omar's
are.
kryptonite in a way, because like he is in that perfect stage of development where he's starting to test his power of life and death over like small creatures, and he just sees I feel like Omar's
like, what if I get a really really big cat
like he's like Omar's just an extension of that, and he does it he's like a little bit freaked out, but like it sort of it feeds into that same stage that he's in where he's fucking up cats and doing shit like that.
But then I don't remember. Remind me, I haven't gotten past episode 8 in this watch of season mm-hmm. 5. But does he ever get credit for killing Omar? Like, does his name ring out in the crew at all?
I assume it does. I don't remember. I will have to watch the rest of the episodes to see if he's named or if people talk about it specifically. I don't think so. Clearly
I don't
all of
think
his
so,
friends know.
Kind of the whole point is that the whole point of this episode is that Omar's death doesn't mean that much to anybody outside of, I guess he's, you know, he's on the corner, so it wouldn't mean something to him, but you know.
Yeah. And even Marlo, when he is the one who's breaking the news to Chris and Snoop about his death, He's like, Chris asked him like, how, who? And he's like, some hopper, you mm-hmm. know, just had a gun and wanted to hear the pop and see the damage.
Right.
And, they don't know him by name. And then when, but let's just watch, that, death scene, just because I feel like, you know, it's,
It's iconic, right?
New Pope. Self pack.
Should have got the hard pack.
Yeah, what is the benefit of a soft pack?
I've never known.
It's cooler.
Is it cooler? Is it cooler? Okay. Is that
it? Looks
it?
Cooler. Yeah, it looks cooler.
I mean, I like that it's soft. I remember I've gotten it and been like, cool. But then I don't know why I did it. Cause
it's like a throwback. It like looks like it. Like they didn't have hard packs back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Omar's like, dig it. He's a throwback. He likes his honey nut. He's very particular. Yeah. He likes his soft pack.
Yeah, yeah. I like that he's autism coded.
I like the pseudo Greek music.
I like this lady.
She's good. She's the best actor of the season.
I don't speak whatever language she's crying in, but I would love to know what she was saying.
It's Korean.
Yeah, I assume it's Korean.
She's saying, oh, darn.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, darn.
I was surprised that Kennard doesn't pull the gun on the lady, kill her, and rob the store.
I was thinking he was going to shoot Omar again to make sure he was dead, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I think he just walked over and saw that his like brains were out, and he was like, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think we did it.
And then, you know, later when Bunk is checking out the crime scene, he sees that, you know, they've all robbed him. Like they took a shotgun. There's like lighters and shit just thrown about. It's like, yeah, so I think people know, at least the people in the corner know Kennard is the one who did it, but I don't know how much he's trying to get.
Only the Korean lady really knows.
Right. And
everybody else is going to be putting it together after the fact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like that's something that is a double-edged sword also, because yes, they make it so that his death is, you know, blasé and you don't really know about it. But because we're so invested in the show, like just like when Vince made the joke, like he likes to see Poot and Dookie like each other. There's something to that. Like, right. And you want to see people really acknowledge Omar's significance to Baltimore, to crime, right. To drug dealing, to drug stealing, like who he was. And it was so underplayed. And I feel like they missed some schmaltzy value.
But that's
there.
The whole point of it. The whole point of it was like, but he's dead and there's going to be another one. And like, you think it's so important, but like the next drug dealer is not going to be that much different than the last one. And the next drug burglar is not going to be that much different than the last one.
Okay. So here's the thing. So I rewatched this and I have agreed with Vince on that. Like, that's been my thought exactly for a long time. And then upon rewatch, I actually found myself agreeing with Dave here more. Only because the show did this weird flip in terms of like reality, like verisimilitude, and kind of like, oh, it's a TV show. Like the McNulty storyline, you know, even the Sun Paper storyline is so like, guys, it's a TV show, you know, in a TV show, this would happen. And you have to be like, you know, and a lot of people
agree
I
agree with you about the serial killer part, but not about the Sun Paper part.
Okay.
What do you mean? The Sun Paper's so, and it's bad TV. It's not only a TV, it's like the worst. No. It's like the TV show. It's the TV show you don't want to watch about the Sun Paper. It's like Tremé.
I love it.
That's what this is. It's like Tremé about the Baltimore Sun.
It's way better than Tremé.
Gus. Fucking Gus.
I love Gus.
I do love Gus.
And Twigs. Who's the
Twig.
Crime?
Twig is cool.
Get
like
out of here. And the fucking, the girl, the woman. It's like, get out of here.
I could do without Twig and Alma, but Gus and Scott are incredible.
Scott Templeton ain't treating me like that. Scott saying ain't. He's not saying ain't. Scott's not saying ain't.
Well, that's why he's saying it, is because he's, you know, he's
a poser. Weasel. He's a fucking weasel.
I guess for me watching this, it was like, okay, so, but even though they've decided to make this season like a little bit more out there with like McNulty, like I've accepted McNulty doing the serial killer thing because I'm like, it's a TV show, it's the last season, and I get the broader point they're trying to make with Omar's death and kind of like the entire
how
Omar's-
is that not true of Omar's death? It's very clear the point they're trying to make. It's like,
well, the point they're trying to make I get, but the problem is that I found myself going like, yeah, but I do I do love this character, and I do.
Yeah, you
think
guys are
like,
just pissed that you didn't get more ice cream. Like, okay.
Well, sometimes
that's true.
Vince,
that's true.
I like fair. Ice cream.
Me too.
Yeah,
I
know,
I love it.
But like you know, like
time
you,
out,
need,
Vince.
You need
time
a little.
Out, time
okay.
Out.
Well, I got one thing to say about this. It's very important. I think that the poetry and the purpose of what you're talking about is 100% on there. However, the follow through of this season is so schlock city horror show that they need the value of caring so that as an audience member, I get a little bit of endorphins to my brain. I feel mm-hmm. a little bit something besides
yes.
this fucking bullshit.
Yes,
you know
there
I mean?
Is a little bit of give me something. And I feel like
I thought they gave you something in the cleverness of they're like I don't
killing
know.
Him
I,
with no,
no
ceremony.
Love,
it just,
yes,
just
well,
kind of offing
and,
him. I
yes,
get that
no,
from a conceptual level.
Yeah.
I totally get it as a conceptual
it doesn't
thing.
Make it doesn't make the city roundup of local news.
Yes.
At the end of the episode,
I
the,
totally get it.
The
they
medical examiner has
switches,
to switch the name
yeah.
card because he accidentally put his name on some white dude.
Yes.
Like yeah, like that's obviously like a very
I get
like, that's
what
a very
doing.
Writerly touch. I don't know what like
I
what you're looking
it's
for.
Like David Chase. Jerking off the cadaver,
David Simon.
Whatever his name is. I swear to fucking Jesus, it is a jerk off festival. And I'll tell you, in every episode up to this one, there was a little jerk off moment about what they know, how smart they are. In this one, it's like every news year, by the time it's Christmas, we're on to the next. It's like, fuck
love,
you. I don't care.
I don't love how much you hate this.
I fucking hate
this episode
shit.
Is the best of this season. I love, this is a Dennis Lehane episode, and I just feel like it's really beautifully written on so many levels. It's very
it's
Dennis Lehane in that it goes from schlocky, but every like schlock move has like a very clear payoff. And like I felt like I got a lot of endorphins out of this episode. I love the weird yeah. horse guy.
Junkman?
Yeah, Junkman. I love Junkman.
Junkman's
great.
Junkman,
the whole
Junkman.
FBI sequence.
That's
incredible.
The best. Listen, for me, and first of all, Vince, do you hate it when I come on your podcast?
No,
is
not at all. I like arguing.
It
I'm Italian.
Is it the worst time of your life?
No, not at all.
Guy.
No, we do this so we can yell at each other.
Yeah, this is just an excuse.
Best
I feel like
thing
the listeners
about-
like it because you're the only one who I get to fight with. Everybody else, like, we probably just agree too much. Like, this, like, this
well,
is
everyone
better.
Else just doesn't have strong feelings about it. And we're yeah. just like, but you love The Wire, right? And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I agreed to come on.
Right, right. Yeah, whereas yeah. I'm like sick. I'm as sick as you guys. Like,
yeah,
right.
I mean, if you were talking shit on the last episode, like I would agree with you probably on every level. But like, I genuinely love this episode. Mm-hmm. Even like outside of the broader arc of this season, I really feel like this is a really enjoyably written episode. And I like what
yes.
it does on a lot of different storylines.
I'll give you one thing. And mm-hmm. the thing that I'll give you is that FBI thing where they assess the serial killer is it's like that's probably the best thing in this whole
yes.
season. And because
yes.
they nail McNulty perfectly. And, yes. and that's where finally I can be like, OK, I can deal with this because they have him so dead to rights.
Right.
It's
and
so-
it's like it's great because the setup to that is he goes in there and there and this guy, he's a little bit over the top. Like it was like it was very much like an FBI hit piece where
yes.
it's like, you worked on the Unabomber. That was 16 years, right? Yeah. And his brother ended up turning him in. Right. And like and you're like, oh, and that's like that's a good mic drop dunk. And you think it's going to end there. But then it brings it around to being great when they actually do the profile and it's they're describing McNulty and he's got that face.
Yeah.
This episode is really well directed and written.
Yeah.
And I think that is like the scene that makes that clearest.
Yes, and we will definitely discuss both those scenes. But is that Brent Flyberg?
Yeah, I hate to stop you guys from arguing. I do love hearing you guys argue, but I think we should take a moment of silence for Omar.
Oh yeah, it's a moment of silence. That's just how I breathe.
And then in his honor, we should do some ads because he loved ads.
Oh, it's time for ad breaks.
Yeah.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We need to pay the bills. And since you are human beings and they haven't yet figured out how to make AI destroy ad revenues for podcasts yet, we still make a little money from ads. So please stick around and we will be right back. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it, he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
And we're back. So before the break, we were talking about the FBI sequences in this episode. And I agree. This is some of my favorite scenes in this episode, possibly in this season. At least one in particular. The first one, you know, the one being the psychological profile of
Jimmy
McNulty. Yeah. And like, so Jimmy is forced to go to Quantico in order to continue this ruse of there being a
to
fake
prove
serial
that
killer.
He's taking this seriously.
Yes. And they are looking at the evidence and putting together the psych profile. And it is one of the funniest things because it seems like something that in the writing of it, like even before, like when they were putting the season together, this was, it was all leading up to this hilarious moment in which they do a psychological profile of Jimmy accidentally. And I have that. It's one of my favorite scenes.
Is likely a white male in his late 20s to late 30s. He likely is not a college graduate, but feels nonetheless superior to those with advanced education. And he is likely employed in a bureaucratic entity, possibly civil service or quasi-public service, from which he feels alienated. He has a problem with authority and a deep-seated resentment of those who he feels have impeded his progress professionally. The suspect has trouble with lasting relationships and is possibly a high-functioning alcoholic.
That's
with alcohol being utilized as a trigger in the commission of these crimes. His resentment of the homeless may stem from a personal relationship with someone who was in that cohort, or his victimization of vagrants might merely present an opportunity for him to assert his superiority and intellectual prowess.
So, what do you think?
They're in the ballpark.
I mean, that is so perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, they should have just been like, let's see, a suspect is most likely of Irish-American descent. possibly.
He probably likes the Pogues and fucks waitresses. After
yeah, exactly. yeah, well, fuck. He fucks for Scrapple.
Yeah, he fucks for Scrapple.
Yeah, he uses his badge in order to allow him to do public fornication, even
he's,
in front
he's
of
probably
other officers.
Bled on strange women's beds at certain yeah, moments of
multiple
his life.
Times.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, like that scene isn't as effective if it doesn't just go on Like the excessiveness of it is the so whole good. Joke. And, and the way that they can just keep going and going and going is like, oh.
The fact that they allowed it to breathe to, if it had just been like a couple of things, it wouldn't have been as, the fact is that that is like 45 seconds long, a string of things that perfectly describe Jimmy McNulty.
It saves the season for me. It really, I mean, honestly, I know it sounds like a stretch, but like, cause you feel, I feel so connected to McNulty and The Wire and the characters and the psychology. And I have such a hard time with this season until that moment. And it kind of gives me the reason for the season, you know, that rhymes unintentionally. Yeah. I didn't mean to lie. But
sure. It's a great rhyme though. Bars. I mean, it is, it's great. The only thing is we also mentioned this other scene with the FBI, also very funny, but so petty that it makes me like, I want to know the background behind the scene. Basically, it's the FBI director comes in to check on Kima and McNulty about this case, but mostly just comes in to brag about being on TV.
Yeah.
Right.
It feels so over the top, but I feel, and like you're watching it and you're like, wow, somebody really has an axe to grind against the FBI.
100%.
And then, but then like the second scene where they nail Jimmy.
With the psych
like,
profile,
makes
yes.
It, yeah, it makes it
it's
work.
Almost, it's almost, yeah, it, they work in tandem perfectly because on the one hand, you're just like, Jesus Christ. Like clearly like Ed Burns was like, let me write this scene or, you know.
Well, yeah.
But this is, I love this scene.
Why make sure you're progressing your case?
Yeah, good. Great, thanks.
You might recognize the director from television.
Yeah, Greta Van Susteren, Nancy Grace, Chris Matthews, that fellow with the big forehead, what's his name?
Alf.
Larry King?
Worf?
Well, I sell some books. Human Hunters, The Rise of the American Serial Killer. They've used a lot of my stuff on those CSI shows. you haven't heard, so I'll leave you to it. Good, honey.
Art was actually lead investigator on the Unabomber thing.
That was like 16 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. Or his victim.
Just, it's so petty.
Yeah. It's so good though, because the FBI spent like years, years fucking taking credit for a Unabomber. It's like, dude, didn't his brother turn him in? What the fuck did you guys do?
Yes. I think though that also typifies the problem with the season. There's a lot of axes to grind.
Sure.
There's a lot of axes to grind and also credit to be given. You know what else I hated in this season that
no,
we don't get to
please
see?
Please tell me.
I hate the fucking Greek in this season. Does he ever seem less Greek than he does after when he starts talking to Marlo randomly?
Yeah.
Why would he do that?
Yeah, no,
I
100% agree with that.
We pointed that out when that happened as being like a very strange, like it, again, another thing where if I'm trying to give some
plus,
grace
we needed
to
two,
the season.
We needed two scenes where he explains the concept of clean money. Like, okay. Like it was,
And
it didn't really make a great point either time. Like both times it was like, you're being a little vague, even though this is the second time you had to explain.
Yeah.
This.
And also like, to me, I'd like cut the cleaning of the money thing in favor of, I don't know, just one extra scene in which they talk about how we're definitely going to have to switch to Marlo here because there's no way
one
that Joe's
other scene
living
of Marlo in the Caribbean, just chilling out on a jet ski like that,
or just something that explains the thinking here, because you would feel like, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like
it doesn't,
the Greek would have had something to say about getting rid of Joe, like something more than like, you know, he is not Joe. It's like,
well, once the Greek's gone, I mean, once Joe's gone, it makes sense that, okay, well, he's gone. We got this guy to deal
with. But it's clear what he's doing to the Greeks. Like the Greeks know, like he's up to something.
Yeah. I think in a few more episodes, they could have had more space to like make a clearer explanation of how that came about. But yeah,
but I think we're talking about three things that are the same thing. Mm-hmm. McNulty setting up these serial killers is not McNulty like fucking what's his face who are we talking Omar going out hunting so weak and over the top is not really prime Omar like, and I don't think Marlo is going to kill Joe. I don't think he's that sophisticated. I don't think he's going to go say hello to my little friend. I don't think he's that level yet. I think they jump him five levels in a fucking 6 week period.
I think it's too short. It's too short of a season in that. I agree. But I also, sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say, I do think that as much as like, this is like, oh, this isn't something McNulty would do. I am so in for him doing it. And I think it's because I know it's like, it's because when I saw it, I didn't like it. And then upon rewatch, I was like, I kind of love this idea of just like changing the, like making it like, what would McNulty do in order to prove that he is smarter than everybody? And in order to get money for the police. And I'm like, I like it. Let's see where it goes.
I think I like The Wire when it transitions from what is to what if. I think that's Hamsterdam. I think that, I like McNulty. Like, I don't know that it gets enough space to breathe, but I like it as a parallel between McNulty and Scott Templeton and Omar, which is that they've all made a sort of bad decision, and then their decisions get progressively worse in order to justify that. Like, they think they're going to be able to just cut one corner and it's going to fix things. But when they cut that corner and they don't get the response from the world that they're expecting, which is that McNulty creates the serial killer, no one gives a shit, he's got to take it a step further. Scott Templeton lies a little bit. He doesn't get hired at the Post. No one gives a shit. He has to like keep going. It's like they all have to just keep doubling down on that one cut corner, and it turns them into monsters. You know,
they give McNulty the grace with Beatty at the end. You get a little breathing room with him and Beatty. You don't get any reflection from Omar, and we would like it. We would like to hear him say something to somebody about his mortality in that situation. He might have had that talk with Butchie or one of his lovers in a past season, like maybe just a line or debunk. Remember that time where him and Bunk or him and McNulty or him and Kima
got.
It's like all that we missed that. The season misses that.
The Beatty McNulty storyline in this episode I don't know. I started watching the credit sequences for these instead of skipping through them, because I feel like it gives me some insight when I see the writer, and to know that this was a Dennis Lehane episode, like that whole sequence feels so fucking Catholic to me, and I love it. Like the way that you explain to someone that they're fucking up is to explain that like none of these people are going to be there for your wake.
One's like, going to be at your funeral is the most so Catholic good. Thing
it's
I've
like,
ever
oh
heard.
No, my funeral. Like, Catholic. I love
but
it.
That's also pre, that's what is that? That's, you know, foreshadowing the McNulty wake at the end of the season.
And also, I mean, it also proves her wrong a little bit, because they did go to that one, which I like. But
but it's also another, there's that moment.
No one's going to be there when you fucking die. The only people who'd be there is me, your girlfriend, and your kids. And
your
maybe
family and your Jesus and nobody else.
If you're lucky, your ex-wife will come if she's not being a fucking cunt.
There's so many things in this episode where like I questioned it a little, and then there was like an immediate payoff, like where Beatty like leaves them, but then I'm in my head, I'm like, isn't that her house?
And
then like in the scene later, she's like, this is my fucking house, you get out of here.
I did love that. And I also was just like, listen, it's 2008, he has a cell phone, right? Just text him. Your stuff is on the front porch. It seems like a long, you know what it is? It's so over dramatic that I love it. I'm like, slay queen, you know?
It comes from the person that would have dated Jimmy McNulty in the first place.
Exactly. So Jimmy is like, you know, he's doing his thing. He's being the little king of diamonds. He's like giving everyone some, you know, stuff. Yeah. And Bunk finally caves in this episode and is like, sign this fucking thing, and it's in order to actually get his DNA tested at the lab, and he is able to do it. Like, Bunk is able to get fucking Chris Partlow. He's able to, you know, get his DNA tested and find out for sure that yes, now we have some fucking cold evidence on Chris Partlow, which means he can finally catch his man. which, you know, isn't proof of the other 22 bodies in the vacants, but it is him putting someone he knows did it behind bars.
I also love how overwritten the medical examiner character is.
Oh, I love it.
It's so good. It's so good. Like, at first I was like, we don't need this guy. And then after that, I was like, all right, I kind of like
him. I love it. Hey, don't worry, Lester.
I love it.
Just sign the motherfucker and shut the fuck up.
Your victim had an address, a home, paid rent, so we assume, maybe even a mortgage, but not homeless in any case, no strangulation, no red ribbon. Christopher Partlow. A lesser man might get pissy because you jumped the line, bunk. Me? I remember Partlow's name from all those cases last year. Congrats. But, don't fuck with me like this again.
I don't believe any of that for a second, but I like his weird hangdog face and his, like,
he's got
his
a
general
funny
attitude.
Face. I like that he's implying in that threat, like, don't do that again, or I'll make sure all your murderers walk the earth for the rest of their life. Like, what's the threat here? You won't solve the crime? seems a little harsh for jumping the line. But yes, I like that they spent time with that, with that character, the guy who, the boss of the lab. And also in a scene earlier, he's looking for him and he's just like, where is he? And you see him, he comes around the corner. He's just got a big sandwich in his mouth. And you're like, is there DNA everywhere?
Sandwich. I like that. That's a classic bit. The person in like a gross job that's just like eat. I remember reading some porn story where they're sitting in the video village. I think it might have been David Foster Wallace's porn story where they're sitting. They're watching.
I thought you were about to say this is like Penthouse Forum or something instead of David Foster Wallace.
No, but they're in the video village like shooting the porn and the director's like, what. What is that? Is there like something wrong with the screen? Am I getting feedback? And he like looks up and he realizes the guy doing the fucking is eating a sandwich and the crumbs are spilling between him and the sandwich. And he's like, hey, can you stop eating the sandwich? And the guy just moves his head sideways and keeps fucking so that his crumbs will not fall in the frame.
It's a living.
It's perfect.
But yes, so Bunk catches his man. Jimmy is telling him to hold off on charging him until they're done with the case. And now Jimmy is like going up to Freeman and is like, we gotta fucking finish this shit. He's almost like, Freeman, there's only two episodes left. Yeah, are we gonna get this done? And then Kima is about to continue on with being a good soldier, a good policewoman, and McNulty can't stand that she's falling for it too, like fooling her as well, and just tells her. And I thought this was nice because so far in the season only Bunk has been the person with the most reasonable reaction to this, which was just yelling at Jimmy like, what the fuck are you doing, like multiple times throughout the season. And he's the only one who's like, I don't know, indicative or like representative of the audience's feelings watching this show, where you're like, Jimmy, this feels insane. Why are they doing this?
Well, see, Jimmy is crypto, and most of the other characters are like all the celebrities that like agree. They're like, oh yeah, I'll make an NFT or whatever, because like they stand to benefit from it. But Kima's natural reaction is like, this is all bullshit, right?
Yeah,
this
what do you call that? A fiat currency. She's a fiat currency lady. I like that scene a lot because you're not sure where she's coming from until she restates that, no, literally, you can't do this. And I love this. Hold on.
No, it just is.
No, I mean, you can't do this.
Well, we're doing it. Whatever they give us to work the bullshit, I throw to Lester or Crutchfield or Norris. Anyone else who has a case that ought to be solved.
Jimmy, you can't do this.
A couple days more. Lester gets his best shot at Marlowe. After that, we'll never hear from the Red Ribbon killer again. Bosses will lose interest. I'll pretend to run out a little more string, and then it goes right back to the admin office. No harm, no foul. Whatever you need, Kima, to work your triple or any other case that matters to you.
it's just so like I love it because I feel like Sonia Sohn as an actress, you know, we've not given her her fair due on the show. She's not been our favorite, like, I mean, a great character, but in terms of acting, not our favorite. Right.
She has some tics, you know,
she has some tics, but
the lesbian sex scene was really, really well done.
Yeah.
No, really, very, very passionate.
I like that. That felt good.
Yeah.
but no, I mean, you know, she's fine. But I love that scene because that is a, you know, that's the, she is very real. Pissed.
She's good.
Very okay, worst Kima scene in the 5 seasons of The Wire. What's your worst Kima scene?
Ooh, God.
See, I don't remember things that she does that are bad. I just remember her going, phew. Like she does that. Yeah, yeah, she does like she does the scoff as a tick, the same way Claire Danes does it in Homeland, where she's all like starting so many lines with, that's the thing that I remember. Like she wasn't like to the point where it took me out of scenes. I don't think
I'm
ever.
Trying it's to just... remember. There is I definitely have a least favorite Kima scene. I'm trying to remember what it was, but.
The ones that pop into my mind.
Yes, please.
The one where like they're in traffic and the dude gets on the car in front of them and she decides she needs to take him down. The white kid who takes his she takes him down. And then and then when she tells the story about becoming a cop and she's like, and he dropped his bracelets. It's give me a break. Kima. Come on. I love Kima, but you know, these are moments that I remember being like,
A little she's
a little schmaltzy.
A little schmaltzy. And you know, the character itself is kind of struggled in terms of its at some point settled on like what if we're just female McNulty, which is like fine. Except for, you know, that in the season in which McNulty is gone, you know, season 4, it doesn't really make up for his loss. So it's kind of like, well, what's the purpose of this? Whereas what's interesting about this is a break from that. This is her being like, oh, I guess I'm not the female McNulty because this is the most fucking insane shit I've ever heard. Like, you know, all of the parallels stop here because she's not at all willing to go along with this.
But I wonder, though, it's like when she goes along with McNulty to lie about Kentel Williamson, but she does it from the get. She's right alongside him. True, I wouldn't be surprised if McNulty had her in on it from the beginning.
Yes.
She might have been in it. But because she found out too late, she felt stupid. And she's like, you're not going to put me in that situation.
Yes.
Where I'm betraying everybody because she wasn't in from the beginning. I mean, that's.
Yes.
And she already had to do a bunch of work.
She's done a bunch of work
she's
on
pissed.
This.
She's got all those fucking files. Are you kidding me? And it's McNulty's bullshit again.
Yes,
it's
you know, I think you're right. Actually, I think you're right. In which case, it would make her still McNulty because McNulty would do this very petty thing. I mean, she is also. They are both petty. But yes, moving on. We gotta talk about the Sun papers as much as we hate it.
I love
Dave,
it. I don't.
We
hate
love it.
It. I love
I'll
it.
I'll be quiet. I'll be quiet.
No, you can talk. So they have that scene in which, you know, they're hyping up the
the punk rock guy comes. The punk rock guy. The good looking wino comes to get angry at Scott Templeton.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
he's
I don't
great.
Think the casting was great on that, but you know.
No,
whatever.
he looked like a homeless veteran kind of. I don't know.
Do you think I sleep under a fucking bridge sober?
Yeah,
it's a good line though. I like that.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
See, Vince agrees there. He's like, fuck, damn it. But yeah, so they are all wondering whether or not this is being a little hyped up. Everyone except for, of course, you know, the editor in chief and Scott Templeton.
Well, Gus is seeing that. Like he's seeing Scott. He doesn't need to know that Scott is lying because all he's seeing is that Scott is refusing to accept even the smallest faults. Because if you say like, oh, you know, maybe I misheard you I could have got that wrong when I was writing it down. Like your editor is going to be like, okay, that sucks. But like it happens. But instead, he's like, no, how dare you? Like, he immediately goes into like, how dare you attack me in this way? And and doesn't even really seem to, like, you can tell his first motivation is to avoid any kind of blame or having to say sorry, rather than like, I see the reason I like the Sun Papers thing is like, you're trying to find the line between Twiggs and Scott Templeton. Like, why does Gus like Twiggs and hate Scott? You know, why does he give Twiggs these kind of assignments that he wants? And I think like the obvious answer is like, Twiggs is displaying curiosity. Like, he wants to, like, he's going out to see what the story is, whereas Scott is merely only ever displaying ambition. Like, he's just going to try and write. He doesn't care about the story. He cares about like being recognized for the story.
Right. He's about ego. And it seems like Twig is more just like a real journalist, you know? And also, I think like even simpler than that, it's just so clear that Scott is thirsty that I think that worries Gus in a way that
Twiggs is
to be worried about.
Twiggs is thirsty too. It's not like Twiggs is out there going like, yes, I would love to find out what that smoke is coming from and write the fire story. Like, no one wants to do that. He wants to write,
but it's a different type
to write
of
an interesting story, but he's thirsty to figure out what's happening. He's thirsty to like understand people and, you know, understand their stories. And Scott inherently doesn't give a shit. He wants to write whatever people will give awards
Gus
to.
Gus has made it clear that he can tell what's in a person's heart based on their writing style. And he sees that like Twig writes things clean. He's very much like facts and declarative statements. Whereas he sees Scott trying to write this like fluffy, you know, like magazine schlock, you know, like he sees someone who is trying to rise greater in his station, you know what I mean? And so I think that is, he's always felt a little weird about Scott because Scott is such a, you know, a little weasel. And I also think Scott is like a white boy in a predominantly black city. And he just doesn't fully trust that he even gives a shit about the city. Like, he can tell, you know, this guy is like, he came from the Kansas City Star and now he's here and he's like trying to like fucking be the fucking, he wants to own this company. He wants to be the big standout. And he's like, fuck you, you know, write some fucking facts.
But Gus is also clearly threatened by Scott.
Yes.
You know, Gus is a hater. Threatened by Scott. Yes. And like, what's his face? What's the guy? The guy who was Walter White's assistant, the editor in chief. What's the guy's name in Breaking Bad?
Gail
Bettinger, whatever his name is. It's like his love of Scott and Gus's hatred. Like, it's just, it's thick, and it's like, for me, Gus isn't likable enough. Gus is so pretentious to me. And they're all pretentious in their own way. So I can't take a side. I'm like, just get me out of the news.
No, but like,
go back to the street.
Gus knows that the only thing keeping this paper from being total dog shit is people that are as cynical as he is.
Right.
And he knows that the underling reporters have to at least care about doing the right kind of job, or else it is just going to be exactly what the shitty bosses want it to be.
Yes.
And
yes.
So of course he hates Scott, because all Scott wants to do is get a pat on the head from the editors. And if you have those people under you, you know, like when the bosses are handing down bullshit assignments, like if they don't have anyone to push back on that, if they just have a bunch of little weaselly yes boys like Scott, you know, it's just going to be him editing all the worst dog shit all day.
Right. Yeah.
But you know what I wonder, though? The big question for me is, it's like The Wire, the brilliance of The Wire exposes the nuance of the police department, the nuance of the drug game, the nuance of Baltimore, and we come to love it. But for some reason, they try to do the same thing with the paper. For me, it fails, and it feels very much like what they do in Treme. Like, it feels like that same style. Like, they go from something really flavorful to really like Chipotle or Costco food or something.
So here's this is the difference. And I think this is why for me, I'm like, no, Treme ain't it. And the reason is because David Simon came from this world. So I feel like instead what I'm getting is insight into what it's like to work at a local paper in that kind of newsroom. So I'm not, I'm not getting where it's like Treme.
Yeah. David Simon did not like grow up in her in fucking New Orleans during.
And not only that,
he didn't. Panama Ray.
Yeah.
God. And like
not,
for me,
not
like
only I, that, but also like in that show, like there's like, again, I don't mean to like harp on fucking Treme, but there is like, all five seasons contain the storyline of these two fucking buskers who fucking suck.
The guy, the original Game of Thrones lover, Dario, the original.
He
was
her?
Like, he was the Khaleesi's original lover on Game of Thrones.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And he was horrible on that too. That guy is the worst.
So it's just like, it is like, so clear it comes from a place of David Simon being like, you know what's cool, New Orleans jazz, and it's like I don't think you
I get that you like it but
you don't know it, whereas like I love the way that David Simon writes from experience with this, where like he puts a little bit of himself in Gus, he puts a little bit of himself in that other thick character who I think is supposed to be him, who's an actual journalist. What's that guy's name?
Vince Zorzi.
Yes. And so I feel like I am getting something like from the inside there in the same way on the street you get.
And
it.
I'm definitely bringing the fact that I worked in media for, 16 years to it, because like even not working in a newsroom, like I get the thing where, you know, when the bosses are like, all right, listicles are doing really well, we got to write like 100 more listicles. And I feel like if you're a person with a soul, you do the Gus thing, which is like, okay, like I'll do what I can to make this a viable business. But like, obviously it's not my life's goal to write fucking listicles. And if you got people coming up under you who are like, oh boss, I got an idea for 10 new listicles.
Yeah,
you're like,
that's the
you're
worst
like,
guy.
Fuck this guy. You're fucking this up for me. Like we're not supposed to like doing that shit. Like we may do it because we have to.
Yeah,
but you're
do
a little
it,
fucking
right.
apple polisher who's ruining this for everyone. If that's like your goddamn life's dream is to do that and get a pat on the head.
Yeah. And the moment in which like he is like when Templeton, like first we have the scene with him and the vet who was like, you wrote a lie on me in the story. You know, I did not say you embellished. Then later we get Gus like going through reading this, reading what Scott wrote about this press conference that happened outside of City Hall, in which Carchetti was out there saying like, oh, we're going to protect you and blah, blah, blah. Basically a campaign stump speech. And Scott decides to write the story with anonymous sources, anonymous quotes. And when Gus spikes his lead for it and spikes the quote, he gets mad and tells on him. He tells the teacher.
Yeah.
And I have that clip just because I think it's great. And I love watching Gus finally stand up to Scott.
I hope this has Scott's little pout, because that's like one of my favorite moment. Okay.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm the little, you know.
He goes like
yeah,
it's so good.
I have him telling on him though.
Okay. Here.
The lead. I'm not running a story about a public gathering. A candlelight vigil at City Hall, in fact, where the lead anecdote end quote is from an unnamed homeless woman.
She doesn't want to be known as homeless. I explained that.
Scott, there were hundreds of homeless down there tonight.
But her story is great. Look at that quote.
It's a perfect quote. Best quote I could ever ask for. And that's my concern at this point.
Get to hell with you if you think I made it up.
Here it comes, Gus.
Yep. Gus, let's discuss this.
Actually, I did discuss it. I discussed it with the Metro editor, and he agrees. We have a sourcing policy here, and I know it, and I do not feel comfortable bending the rules in this instance. And I...
He's such a fucking rat. Like, the fact that he tattletales on him and it's just like, hey, Gale from Breaking Bad. they're spiking my lead.
This black guy being mean to me.
This black guy's picking on me.
This black guy.
Yo, save that whole fucking scene for another show. Keep the wire pure. I don't want to know about their, I don't need to know about the sourcing policy at the fucking set.
I love it.
Get out of town. The sourcing policy is very well known at this page.
Make the wire great again. Get rid of the paper.
I mean, they're all nerds. Paper. They're all nerds. When you stand on principle, you're going to like grandstand about the nerdiest shit possible. That's what he's doing. Like, they're
sourcing
all,
policy.
He's trying to fight nerds with nerdiness. And it's, you know, that's just how it's going to go down.
Yeah.
And we're going to go from there to Junkman, which is the biggest pandering in the history of The Wire. Dookie on the truck. It's like they want to show the most salt of the earth shit, but it's too salt of the earth. Just give me a good lake trout. I just need a fish sandwich and a crab, whatever, a little grape soda. That's enough for me. I don't need the junk, man. I don't need sourcing policies. It's too much. Too much.
I love the junk man. I like any True Grit bear man character, like the magical cat, the person that's just there kind of scavenging and is like pseudo supernatural in a way.
No, I like Bruiser. And where Bubbles needed a place to live, so he lives with Bruiser. But Junkman, he pays fucking Dookie $10 for a day? Michael's got money coming out of his ears. What is Dookie going to spend the day? Dookie's not on heroin anymore. He doesn't need to ride that truck for $10. He could babysit.
He just wanted something to do.
He did go from...
he wanted something to do. That guy's got a cool horse that goes jingle jangle.
I get a kid being like, no, like the Arabers are kind of cool. They got a horse. They got junk on it. Pretty sick life. Like, there's a part of me that, especially as like for Dookie, who's like literally covered in piss at all times. Yeah, he's like, yeah, that seems fun.
No, but Dookie's all fresh now. They picked up the girl at the amusement park. I think he feels probably some trauma. The chicken necks and the grease. Give me extra chicken grease, Chinese food.
Yeah.
He has turkey grease and his Chinese food. I don't think he's going to the junk man off of the junk. Once he's off of junk, he's going to work at Foot Locker. He's going to get the job with Poot. He's not going to be like a Whitey Sale. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah,
for Dookie.
I think they were just trying to set him up for where he was going to be. Again, not enough episodes in the season, so it goes from him talking to Poot and being like, oh, I can't get a job at Foot Locker.
Do you guys get that, like, they're the city's crumbling and they're literally like picking through the
I don't need that shit either.
I don't know if you guys got it though.
Did you get the quote from Junkman? It's like, give me a fucking break. But where's Presbulowski? Is he dead? Why
no, he's around? He'll show up in a couple of episodes.
He should hire Dookie in some sort of manservant kind of capacity.
Well, I mean, he's a teacher. He doesn't get paid himself.
Right. Right. Well, keep going. I don't want to derail this show.
Well, no. That is pretty much what happens in the episode. And Gus standing up to him was great. Now is just the time to say favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something that we missed.
Yes. Can I go?
Yes, go.
Okay, so you missed Scott's little pout. I rewound it like 3 times because he did such a good, like it was an audible.
You love
like,
Scott.
Like, I really do love Scott. He's such a perfect weasel. That was probably my favorite. My least favorite. I sort of get where it comes from, but like the Twigs talking about how he wants to tell this story about Bubbles. He's like, oh, I just feel this guy. I feel like this guy Bubbles. I feel like that's a story. And it's like, yeah, that's very self-referential. Cause it's like, oh yeah, I feel like this guy is a story. It's like, oh really? Would you make him say like a major character, like on a TV show on HBO? Do you think he's that kind of a story? It's kind of just being like, man, aren't these characters that we made a show out of worthy of their stories being told? It's like, yeah, they are. Of course. Yes. We did that.
Totally agreed. Yeah. Totally agreed. And a clean Bubbles is not a compelling Bubbles.
You guys agree?
Bubbles clean. I mean, he's just not compelling. I agree.
I'm stoked on it. It's making me horny. This is like when two characters on a show are friends.
Yeah. It's like they had to
when guests and Vince are friends.
They had to take a time out to explain that Bubbles is a really good actor. And it's like, yeah, I know. I've been watching the show.
Yeah, but you know, he's not as compelling. But I will say later on in the season, we get more Bubbles as a clean person. And as much as yes, I agree, it's not as compelling to watch someone, you know, recovered or whatnot. It is Andre Royo giving some of his best acting, I think, in the series. Like I love watching him share when he finally opens up about what happened with Sherrod. I'm just like, oh, it's so good. That's my shit. Yeah. So if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, I think I would give it a B plus. Vince, what would you give this episode? How do you get a letter grade?
I really think that this episode is like the high water mark of season 5. I really love the writing on it. So in light of those factors, I have to give it a solid B plus.
Oh my God. And Dave, Dopey Dave, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Listen, I like you guys. I like being on the show, but I'm not giving this one a B plus. I'm not doing it. I'll give it a solid, honest, an honest C minus.
Okay.
Yeah, a C. A solid C. I'll give it a 75.
Okay.
And I want to say the worst thing, and it wasn't in this episode,
oh, yeah,
the
please.
Way they show 12 Step with that fake white prostitute and
that's...
fucking Steve Earle running the meeting. I hate it.
How interesting. I thought that was the closest that I'd seen a show get to actually kind of showing what a meeting looks like. Not in terms of the acting skill, but I mean, in every other TV show, it's always just fucking like crosstalk. Everyone's talking. And then the fucking guy who's chairing the meeting is like the therapist. And you're like, that's not how it works.
Waylon has too much juice this season. When he was a much lesser, when season 4, that was a meeting, I could stomach the meeting. Season 5, I don't want to hear about it. I'm done. True.
He anyway, does seem like he's king.
I'll give it 75. See.
75. See. All right. So I'm going to just do some quick math here on my phone. Boop, 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 boop,
boop, boop. Oh, wow. He's got a really sophisticated thing. I didn't know he had that contraption.
Oh, wow. The calculator says it's a solid B-plus episode of The Wire. But you know what? Solid A++++ episode of Pod Yourself, The Wire, Dopey Dave, Dave from Dopey. Thank you so much for coming back on and talking The Wire with us.
It is my favorite thing. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Where can people find you and tell us about your show?
Oh, our show is about drugs, addiction, and dumb shit. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts or at dopeypodcast.com.
Yes, check it out. It truly is a great show, and you've interviewed a lot of really amazing people telling amazing stories. I'm so jealous you got Andre Royal.
Oh, I got Steve Earle too.
And you got Steve nice. Earle.
He was a great disappointment, Steve Earle. He was almost as bad as Waylon on The Wire.
Yeah.
It wasn't my finest episode, but it was cool. It was cool. I'm a huge Steve Earle fan, and he's not a huge Dave Manheim fan. Believe it at that.
All right. Fair enough. Well, check out Dopey. It's a fantastic podcast. And once again, Dave, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys for having me.
Hell yeah. Wires. The Wire. Patreon.com/broadcast. Once again, the $8 tier gets you a shout out, bitch. And so we're going to do some shout outs. Vince, do you have your shout out hat on?
I do.
Thank God. First and foremost, from two people who are long time like $8 or more donors who still have never gotten names. First is Nick Totaro.
Oh, we call this guy Oz. Toto is the
okay. Got it.
Dog. Yeah, no, he's there. Yeah, or the Tin Man, whatever.
Was it worth the wait, Nick? I love both these guys, Nick and Jesse. They are longtime listeners. Fraught listeners. Pod Yourself a Gun. Pod Yourself a Wire. next, Jesse Berman.
I'm going to call him Jesse Bear, man. We're calling this guy Pooh because he's a bear. He's a bear and a man. He's a bear that dresses like a man and steals
honey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the guy that stole picnic baskets.
I feel like, Winnie the Pooh didn't like, he's not like he purchased the fucking honey. He's also stealing.
Yeah, he's a thief.
All bears steal.
Abab.
Abab. All bears are bastards. Okay, next, another one we were late on. Drew Robert Winter.
We call this guy Season because he comes in there and he gets cold.
Yeah, Winter. You don't even have to. So those were three people who reached out. You can do that too. Remember to do that if you haven't heard your name. Again, this is, you know, now there's only two more episodes left for you to do it. All right, the rest. Everything goes dumb. That's his name.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to.
Well, we called Toto Oz. We're going to call this guy Toto because that means everything in Spanish.
Oh, it does. Mm-hmm. That's true. Next, John O. Crowley.
Yeah, dude. We call this guy Alistair.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Of course.
I was trying to go for a Satanist. I don't know.
No, you don't. I know who Alistair Crowley is. Next, Peter Del Mastro.
PDM. PDA? Get a room, dude. No, we call this guy.
You're almost there.
Call this guy Mastro P.
Oh, that's very good. I'm glad you went in that direction. Next, Justin Harlacher.
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 He's a Harlacher. We call this guy Coats, because, you know, if you want a hard lacquer, you got to get a lot of coats on there. That's what
you
I
really
say.
Are when you try, you're impressive. and the last one for this week, Stephen Harley.
We call this guy Rumble Harley because that's the sound that a Harley makes. My son is obsessed with motorcycles. I really hope he gets over that before he reaches
me too.
The age.
Fuck that shit. Danger machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is your street name shout outs for this week. Once again, please let us know if you haven't heard yours and it's been a while. Patreon.com/Frogcast, $8 tier sign up. Let us know by going to frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss. Yeah, bitch, suck a dick. Let's do this. Lookouts and hoppers, they run away as Omar comes round the corner. Crusading and invoking Marlowe's name as the kitty cat is tortured. Yeah, motherfucker. Maybe he's too young to seek another with the gun. But the wild. Fucking old. Broken down and hungry for revenge, lumbering and limping. Yeah. His own my little canard just called him gimpy. Too young to cool off, and too old to stop ripping and running. Sometimes a man gets carried away when it feels like vengeance is mine. Much too blind to see canard is behind. You're like, oh, fuck. So I wait for it, and I'll burn. We know they will kill this series regular.
when it's now too late. Alone goes Omar to the bodega. The front door bell is ringing. But Omar looks over and he ignores it, 'cause it's just a little kid. My stomach churns. I've seen more than once. Cannot kill Omar. A pop and then the wire star falls over. Cannot kill Omar. All my riches for David Simon to do a season 5 do over.
What do you want to say? What does the cow say? What does the cow say?
Beep, beep, right. Beep, 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 beep.
Let's do
beep.
It. I got to take care of my child.
Oh, you tell you.
Shut up, bitch. Mr. Shut Up, Mr. Bitch.
Okay.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.